Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time lady who lunches.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, a show that features two people who came of age during the 1960s and a third who, during that momentous decade, wasn't even a gleam in his future parents' eyes. Looking at you, Nathan. The 60s are on the docket this week, thanks to the two films set in that period that we'll be discussing. The first is the romantic comedy Fly Me to the Moon, which stars Scarlett Johansson and Channing Tatum as two people on opposite sides of a plan to sell NASA's mission to land astronauts on the moon. The second is The Bike Riders, which stars Jodie Comer as a woman who recalls what it was like to be around the likes of motorcycle-riding rebels played by Austin Butler and Tom Hardy. Let's begin with the space race that, at least at first, the United States seemed to be losing to Russia. The year is 1969, and time is running out to fulfill the promise of the late John F. Kennedy to land American astronauts on the moon by the end of the decade. But the American public and some of the members of Congress who represent them have lost interest in the mission. So a shadowy government figure, played by Woody Harrelson, hires a skilled marketing specialist, played by Scarlett Johansson, to come up with a plan to save things, specifically the planned Apollo 11 moon project. Our marketer, Kelly, who has her own checkered background, immediately runs up against the straight-laced launch director Cole, played by Channing Tatum. The film is directed by rom-com specialist Greg Berlanti, follows the bickering too as it plays out according to the genre's typical traits, particularly in terms of its bouncing back and forth from light drama to comedy, even as it imposes a fictional story on real-life events. Busy and fun for the most part, Fly Me to the Moon coasts along Berlanti's easy direction and the talents of his cast, with Johansson, for one, proving to be surprisingly versatile.
Let's be clear, Fly Me to the Moon is not really about the moon launch. It's about other things surrounding the moon launch. So the Apollo 11 project, we're beginning to get the impression at the start of this film, is struggling a little bit to capture the hearts and minds of the American public. So something needs to happen. I guess all of those men in white shirts, chain smoking with black ties, was not going to do it in terms of some sort of commercial venture or whatever. But I think this movie, I mean, we can talk about what it isn't and then what it is. And Dan, I think that you described it perfectly in terms of, you know, it's fun. I think it's entertaining.
It's a beach read equivalent of a movie.
To some extent. But then I think it's actually a little bit more nuanced than that. We won't get into my theories about who actually filmed the moon launch, because that's been an ongoing topic of discussion in our household. So things that I really liked about this film, I loved Scarlett Johansson. I thought her performance was excellent. Channing Tatum started out a little slow, in my opinion, and I didn't think he was necessarily in the same movie, but he ultimately picked it up. The character who I probably appreciated the most was Ray Romano's character, and he was almost unrecognizable. When he first came out, I thought it was John Turturro. But this is not a summer blockbuster movie, but honestly, in many respects, I think it is the movie that we need right now. When we saw this whole... all of humankind came together to watch this moon landing happen in real time. And, you know, there's something about that that this summer seems particularly appealing.
Well, sorry to be the womp womp.
Millennial.
Yeah, I thought this was a dud. And I kept thinking all the way through Fly Me to the Moon, especially through the first hour as they're kind of setting up all of these pieces, and we're thinking, okay, how are all of these pieces eventually going to get moved around? I just kept thinking, what is this movie exactly, and what is it about? Because it kind of starts off trying to be this zippy screwball comedy.
Rom-com.
Even before it becomes a rom-com, it's sort of this satire about the advertising world. Mm-hmm. There's some like Mad Men adjacent kind
or
of
My Girl
going
Friday.
His Girl Friday.
Sorry.
Yeah, they're kind of trying to do that. Or Down with Love, the Renee Zellweger, Ewan McGregor movie that was kind of the Rock Hudson, Doris Day pastiche. Then it turns into this genuine romance between these two people. And then it becomes also this drama about both of these people's troubled pasts. And I just don't think it really...
And you're forgetting the conspiracy theory that...
Well, I was getting to that. But I don't really think that any of those pieces quite worked for me. It all felt kind of half-baked. And then an hour into this two-hour movie, Fly Me to the Moon, it becomes about, well, in case the moon landing doesn't happen, we're going to have to bring in a filmmaker to fake the footage. And then it becomes this whole, you know, kind of conspiratorial, another kind of form of screwball comedy. And I just kind of thought that that was a little too late. The whole thing felt weirdly paced and structured to me. And I also just didn't think it had any real tension or conflict, which is what this kind of comedy needs. Like, in order for all of the screwball pieces to come into place, you need to have that tension where you're worried that everything could go wrong at any possible minute. And I never felt that. It almost had, like, too much ease about it in a certain way, but then it wasn't amusing to me. And so I just kind of felt like this whole thing was a missed opportunity, although it had interesting ideas in it here and there. And I agree with you about Scarlett Johansson. She's exactly the right actor for this kind of material. And I've liked Channing Tatum in a lot of things. I don't think he works in this at all. I don't think he is the right actor to play this kind of straight man in, you know, sort of a romantic comedy, even though he was kind of the straight man in the Magic Mike movies, and I thought he worked in those. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't care for his performance in this, and so that was also a huge hindrance for me. He's one of the two stars of the movie, and yeah, if one of the stars doesn't work for you,
I thought he started out Sully. Finally, I was able to connect. But
I didn't have any problem with him at all. So the one actor we've not talked about is Woody Harrelson, who plays this shadowy operative, you know, Mo.
The whole way through, I just kept imagining, because I was trying to entertain myself a little bit, I just imagined that it was his same character from No Country for Old Men, and that this is what he did before his work in
there
that
movie.
There we go. I kept thinking about that.
There we go. Yeah. Well, I mean, no disrespect, Nathan, but, you know,
none taken.
One of the things people always used to ask me all those years that I reviewed movies for The Spokesman was, you know, don't you ever just go to a movie and shut your brain off? Do you always have to be the critic? And,
yes,
you know, I always said, yeah, I always have to. But Fly Me to the Moon is the kind of movie that invites you to do exactly that. And I just didn't have the problems that you have with it. I just was able to just sit back and enjoy it. And maybe that's the difference in our ages, because, you know,
this was current events for us.
Exactly. It did bring up memories for me of that era.
Okay, but wait. So, No. I'm going to push back on that, because how do you explain then why I loved Richard Linklater's movie about the Apollo 11 launch, Apollo 10 and a half?
Well, you like Richard Linklater.
Well, yeah, but I also liked Hidden Figures. I liked The Right Stuff. Yeah. I've liked all kinds of movies about this particular period of time. So I don't know if that's quite true. I mean, obviously, I'm going to come at this from a different perspective than you, having not been there. But I thought other movies have done this so much.
But what I'm trying to say is, it doesn't have anything to do about the quality of the movie. It has everything to do with how the movie fits into our memories and our feelings those memories. So it, you know, I fully understand the nitpicking you're doing about Fly Me to the Moon.
It's not nitpicking because all of these things, I was frustrated because it kept bringing up intriguing ideas, and there were plot lines where I was like, okay, I'm interested to see where they take them. And so I was frustrated by the fact that it didn't pay off for me.
Well, and we haven't talked about the whole political backdrop against which this is operating, because they have to. And I guess that's what seemed realistic and possibly, you know, parallels what's happening today, that they had to get this buy-in from all these different people. And they managed to do that in different ways by appealing to these politicians, you know, sensibilities and so forth. But I think because this was happening during the Mad Men era, I mean, now we're used to seeing advertising on jerseys and, you know, everything else. That was not true. And so the fact that they were making these connections, you know,
Omega
with these
watches.
Right.
Omega.
Or most
Drink
notably
Tang.
That was the most interesting element to me about the sort of the historical fabric.
Well, and
of the
you
movie.
Can appreciate that given the range of work projects in which you've been involved, you know. So, and I
do you drink
that,
Tang? I'm just
you know,
curious.
I haven't had Tang in a long time. This movie did make me want to go to the store.
Check it out again. Yeah.
I also want to talk about the angle here, because the Scarlett Johansson character, we find out, is essentially a con artist and has been,
since she
was a kid. And so we see that she's able to kind of, you know, schmooze just about anybody. And that was also kind of another problem I had, because I love the idea of her having to go to each political figure and try and win them over with these specific things about their, like, she could clock everyone and figure it out.
Yeah.
But then there was no conflict there either, because she would go into these situations and it all worked out just fine. And I just kind of wanted that, like, I needed a little more tension here, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I guess
I
was relieved by the lack of tension.
Okay.
I mean, honestly. And it starts out where she goes in.
I mean, that's fair. Yeah. She goes in and pitches about the world.
She pitches these guys, you know, about how to market automobiles. automobiles and, you know, and she's pregnant and so forth. And then we find out that it's actually a fake pregnancy bump. And so, I mean, that just set the stage for sort of who her character was and what she was going to be. And like I said, I thought it was fun. Not everyone felt that way. So you get to decide. Go revel in the air conditioning and
but,
check it out.
You know, it's been established on the show that I am a hater. So I don't know what to tell you.
Okay.
Yeah, you've taken my mantle on that. Anyway, that was our discussion of Fly Me to the Moon. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss The Bike Riders. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I debated the virtues of the rom-com Fly Me to the Moon. Let's now move to another film set in the 1960s, Jeff Nichols' adaptation of a photo book featuring a Chicago-based motorcycle club. If the name Jeff Nichols sounds familiar, it might be because you've seen films such as Take Shelter or Mud, Midnight Special, or Loving. With The Bike Riders, Nichols follows the intent of Loving, in particular by capturing real-life characters, these particular ones memorialized in a book of photographs written by Danny Lyons. Nichols keys on Kathy Bauer, played by Jodie Comer, who narrates the history of the Vandals Motorcycle Club and her relationship both with Benny Cross, played by Austin Butler, and the club's founder, Johnny Davis, played by Tom Hardy. We watch as Davis, inspired by Laszlo Benedict's 1953 film The Wild One, starring Marlon Brando, forms the club, then enlists the arch-rebel Benny to join him. We hear Kathy describe how time gradually changes things as drugs and drink cause disruptions in club loyalties and so on. The British Comer, as usual, is impressive in her ability to affect an American accent, though Midwest-born Mary Pat questions the accuracy of her efforts here. Butler, 2022's Elvis star, is a bit too glamorous to play Benny convincingly, and Moody Hardy, one of the great actors working today, seems to be slumming. As for the movie itself, despite director Nichols' obvious talent, I'd opt instead to again watch what Benedict and Brando put on the screen all those 7 decades ago. It's bound to be streaming somewhere.
Well, now the shoe is on the other foot, because I liked this movie a lot, The Bike Riders. And also, I'm a fan of Jeff Nichols' work. We did a show not that long ago where we talked about underappreciated directors, and I chose him, knowing this movie was on the horizon, and I thought it was quite good. I did have issues with it, though. I thought that Nichols kind of makes a mistake right up top by making this film so similar in structure, in tone, in just the way it plays out to Goodfellas. I mean, it even has, just like Goodfellas, there's this little prologue that ends with a freeze frame of, you know, something about to happen. Then it goes back in time and you've got the kind of narration over the top of it. And I just thought, don't remind me of one of the greatest films ever made, you know, because I'm going to be comparing it most likely unfavorably to your movie. But I think he's trying to do a lot of the same things that Scorsese was doing with that movie. And I think that The Bike Riders is about a lot of things. I mean, you mentioned Brando in The Wild One, and we get footage from the movie in here because it basically inspires the Tom Hardy character to start a motorcycle club in the first place. And so I think this film is about iconography and how loaded iconography can become, how iconography is both influenced by and then kind of influences real life and how they distort one another. And then it's also about just the changing tides of America at this particular point in history, and the characters themselves are representative of that kind of turbulence. And you see how this particular club that started with good intentions, you know, it eventually becomes corrupted as the 1960s turn into the 1970s. And as people are coming back from Vietnam and everyone's sitting around drinking beer turns into drugs and violence. Yeah. I like Nichols. I mean, he's a very understated filmmaker, maybe a bit too understated at times. And I think that The Bike Riders, it's not a soft film, but maybe it could have used a little more edge. Like, for instance, they don't really touch the issue of race with a 10-foot pole in this movie, despite the fact that the characters are walking around with, you know, SS regalia on their uniforms. The movie really doesn't deal with
that. And it's set in Chicago, which it's a heavily black town. And,
yeah, Nichols doesn't get anywhere near that. But I think the themes that he is touching on left me with a lot to think about. And I just liked the texture of this movie. The performances and the style of it and the music in it is great. So I think it could have had a harder edge, and I think it would have been a better movie that way. But I liked what he was doing.
I liked a lot about the way it was filmed and, like you said, the texture of it. But honestly, I didn't believe any of the three lead characters at all. I mean, Austin Butler, no, way too pretty, you know.
I don't disagree.
And he did not own being this.
And he stays pretty, even though his face gets smashed in a couple of times.
I know. So I couldn't buy that. And Tom Hardy, I mean, we've seen him in other portrayals of this sort of tough guy. And he just didn't pull off this performance, at least as I was concerned.
Compare that to what he does in Peaky Blinders.
Right, exactly. Yes, exactly. And I think that the character who I believed the most was Michael Shannon, who's been in a lot of Nichols films. Yes.
Well, you know how I feel about Michael.
Right, exactly. I thought he was the best. And Jodie Comer, who I do like, Dan mentioned something about her accent. And in fairness, I think if you live in the Midwest, even like small little areas, block to block, people can sound, you know, talk differently and so forth. So maybe I have that wrong because, you know, she does maintain her sort of character and her persona throughout. But yeah, there's just something that didn't work for me. And I really do think that it was miscast in some respects. And that, if you can't get beyond that, then you've got some problems because Nathan focused on these different themes that were presented. And I think that that was, you know, worthwhile exploring. But again, I couldn't buy it.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you talked about the things that you saw in the movie, Nathan, because I came out of it and have stayed with the idea that this movie's really about nothing.
I don't know.
I don't know what's going on. I mean, it's a story that's been told a dozen times in movies. I don't think Nichols brings anything new to it. And I think the big problem for me is they tell the story through the character who's not even really part of the club. If this movie
he's
had been told through
Jodie Comer.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
If the movie had been told through the Michael Shannon character's eyes, I might have thought, ooh, now there's a movie.
I don't know. Maybe that would have worked. I'm not sure. I thought that what was interesting about the framing here of making Jodie Comer, who's, you know, as the wife of one of the bike riders, she's sort of on the outside.
Longtime girlfriend and eventual wife. Yes,
but she's sort of on the outside looking in to a certain degree. And I thought that what was smart about that from Nichols' perspective as a storyteller is that he's able to put all of these observations in her mouth that the bike rider characters themselves wouldn't make. So she has a really interesting speech at one point where she talks about all of these hierarchies and power structures that exist within this gang. They were all arbitrary. They were just made up on the fly, but then they become gospel at a certain point. And as more and more people joined this club, they're just bound to be corrupted. And she's watching it happen almost in slow motion. And she also talks about the fact that they all have to have this collectivism because individually they have no power whatsoever. They're social outcasts. They've been rejected. Michael Shannon, I think you're totally right to zero in on him, not only because he's amazing in everything he does, but he comes in and he also has this speech. He's talking to the Mike Feist character who's, you know, interviewing
him. The photographer.
And he's talking about, you know, I wanted to go and fight in Vietnam. I enlisted. I wanted to, you know, be in the army and serve my country. And they wouldn't have me. And to me, that's almost the thesis of the film. You think that's why
the outsiders,
this guy is rebelling, is because he's trying to conform and they won't even let him conform because they say, oh, we want patriotism, but not from you. And so I thought that was something that I hadn't seen from these kinds of films before, out in that way.
Yeah, and I think that probably even the U.S. Army realized that this guy was a little unhinged. Yeah.
For sure, yes.
Well, you know,
You're a little too excited to go off in any other movie,
if that speech had been given by any other actor, it might not have had the same effect. But Shannon could read the phone book, and he could make it interesting.
Well, and I think
he's just one of those actors.
I think there are little supporting characters throughout this movie. Like, say what you will about the three main performances, and we at least have to give them credit.
Yeah.
They're taking big swings.
They're trying.
They're trying. I think these performances have been kind of divisive, not least because of the accents that everyone's trying out. And I did, incidentally, I looked this up, that Jodie Comer is playing a real character, and someone said that they were at an event and Jeff Nichols played footage of the real woman she's playing, and they were like, that is exactly what she sounded like, because I wondered the same thing as you. But I think there are little supporting characters in the Bike Riders that do bring a lot of life, and I'll say it again, texture to this movie. Not just Michael Shannon, but Norman Reedus shows up as this guy.
Norman Reedus,
yes. I was going around in California, and I wasn't really fitting in, and now I'm down here. So there are all these, you know, these people that bring real flesh and blood kind of life to
this
story.
And Nathan, you were talking earlier when we were chatting about this informally about the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And I agree. I love the soundtrack.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, hearing like the Shangri-Las and, you know, all of
Out in the Street by the Shangri-Las is just one of the best songs. And it's sort of like a motif. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know,
movie,
you brought up Norman Reedus, and to me that was one of the problems of the film, because immediately he came on screen, I went, who is that guy?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's Norman Reedus. Took me right out of the movie, and I didn't see a character, I saw an actor playing a character, and so that did not happen with Shannon. I knew it was Michael Shannon, but immediately there was the character, you know? So
yeah, I mean, and I mean, I've said it. This isn't a perfect movie. I have problems with
the Bike
Riders.
And it's not as good as any of his other movies.
I don't know about that. I don't think
Take Shelter?
It's not as good as something like Take Shelter. I would absolutely agree. I mean, that's still, I think, his very best film and maybe Michael Shannon's very best performance. But I think it is in keeping with a lot of the themes that he's been exploring in all of these movies. He's not only interested in American history, but he's interested in the people that get forgotten in the retelling of American
history. Well, and I think
about American
loving.
History, for better
or worse. That's,
loving.
You know,
yes.
Doing all of the juxtaposition of telling these stories of people in different ways during this time period is pretty, you know, awesome.
And in a believable, not hokey kind of way, at least to my
And I want to make it clear that we're not criticizing Jeff Nichols as much as we are this particular film.
Right.
Bike Riders.
He's definitely a director.
But can watch it on streaming if you're so inclined.
If you are so inclined. And also, you can go back and watch The Wild One, too. Compare the two. Anyway, that was our discussion of The Bike Riders. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed the rom-com Fly Me to the Moon. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot, on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words, which are taken from the Beatles' final album, Abbey Road. And in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.